Scientists tell us that the terrifying experience of sleep paralysis is a completely natural occurrence. Our minds wake up before our bodies, and we feel trapped in our own corporeal forms, our arms pinned to our beds above our heads, our mouths unable to make a sound. These same explanations tell us it's common to feel like a demon or other evil force is attacking us during sleep paralysis. We feel a weight on our chests, cold air hitting our faces, and an unseen presence moving around us. But if you can accept that feeling like you're being physically attacked by a demon is a completely natural part of interrupted sleep, then how do you explain the exact same thing happening to over a dozen young women in a dorm at the same time of night over the course of several weeks? And if you had been one of these women, would you be able to brush it off as a completely natural occurrence? Or would you accept that maybe you too had come face to face with a demon in Mumbai?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we are joined here with Roshan, who is going to tell us a story, a very creepy story, again, because we just realized we weren't recording the first time around. So.
Womp, womp. Hello, Roshan.
Hey, Diana. Hey, Becky. Again.
Yeah, so if you could tell us again a little bit about where you lived at the time that the story is taking place, and if you'd like to share with us where you live now, and then we'll just let you launch right into your story again.
Okay. I'm going to share with you all. It happens in Mumbai, India, around the year 2004, when I'm doing my post-graduation studies there. It's known as Mumbai now, but it was known as Bombay then.
Do you mind sharing the school where you were studying?
It was called Rai University.
That's a rather famous one, isn't it?
Yes, it was one of the schools that was well known during that time. I was in post-graduation and I used to live in a girls' dorm. And our university is a big building, like a skyscraper. India, especially Mumbai, the geography is small, but everything goes up towards the sky, just like New York. So we had our college, and then we had dorms on the top floors. So it was the girls' dorm, and then we had a boys' dorm above us. So my story starts around the time when I was already 1 year in my program and towards the end of my term. Some of the girls in the dorm, in the graduate program, started to have some experiences at night. They had this cold, creepy feeling and weird noises coming out. They could hear outside and sometimes inside their rooms. Very personal, space-evading experiences. A couple of the girls around 12 for a week were quite disturbed. At night after dinner, everyone in the dorm used to just walk by the halls and mingle and have fun and chat. But we used to start to see that they used to be just closed off and talking among themselves. They used to look very worried. Being the seniors, we went up and asked them if they were okay, what's going on, what's happening that they're worried about. And they shared that for a week, they have been hearing noises outside, inside, and just feeling creepy in their rooms. But when they talked to the other dorm rooms, girls, they said they didn't have that. Only two dorm rooms had that problem. After a week, I saw one girl who was kind of close to me. She started to look really tired, bags under the eyes, and depressed and anxious. Whenever I used to see her in campus, go past her, you say hi, she was not herself. During one of the nights when we were, you know, after dinner, we just sit and chat. I asked how she was feeling. That why was she so depressed and looking so tired? She said she also had experiences like evading of the personal space. And she was like, it's not outside. It's happening right to me. She was like, I think I'm being haunted by a ghost. No, she said, I know so we have a ghost because every night I am not able to sleep. And some of the girls, like her roommates, are also having some experiences. And when they sat together and shared their experiences, they saw that the pattern, the time pattern, was somewhere between 2:40 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. And that is when most of them woke up and started to have this cold feeling and all those ghostly things. She's like, I'm really worried and I'm really anxious. I'm really depressed and I'm really tired. I just need to sleep. The ghost part was second in my mind. I just, looking at her, I just wanted her to sleep. And I invited her over to our dorm. We were three girls. And I was like, just come and sleep with us for the next 2 to 3 days. Take your time. Clear your head, get some sleep. And she used to sleep like a log for the next 1 week. And then she was like, I can't be here forever. So she said, I think I can go back and maybe try to find a way to deal with it. But during this time, when she confided that she was having some ghostly experiences, me being a Catholic, I always used to keep my rosary with me. And I gave her a rosary to at least have that peace of mind that you'll be protected. She was not a Catholic, but everyone in India is religious, so they don't mind. We kind of share. It's like everyone goes to the same God. It's like, I don't care. I can borrow your God. And I'm like, I hope you don't mind. She's like, no, I'm perfectly fine. I just need someone. After she left, a couple of nights later, I am awakened at night, middle of the night. When I open my eyes, I'm not able to move. And I try to get up and I can't move. My head is frozen stiff to the bed. My hands are frozen stiff to the bed. I cannot twitch one finger. The next reaction is you want to scream or make a sound. I couldn't open my mouth. I couldn't scream. Not even. Everything was frozen. And it wasn't too dark because you have night lights in your room. So I could see that there's no one physically present, but I could feel it. I felt presence right above my head, behind my bed, like someone is pinning me down from behind. And I could feel a cold feeling coming over, like someone is looking over you and coming over to your face. And as it's moving, I'm screaming inside, but I cannot make any sound and I'm struggling to move. When such experience happens, you are so focused. Your senses get so heightened. You feel like everything is in slow motion. So you feel each and every movement that's happening. I could clearly feel something moving cold over my head, over my face. It comes towards my eyes and above my nose. Being a Catholic, I'm yelling my prayers inside. You know that you can't escape. You just want to give your all and just fight back or yell. And that was what I was doing. This is not going to happen to me. You are not going to do anything to me. I won't let it happen. And I am praying. And I'm praying. I could feel my energy and my anger and my survival kind of instinct kicked in. I don't know what kicked in me. I felt it go back, retract. And I started to feel my hands coming back to me. And I finally got my voice and I yelled. I could scream. And all my roommates woke up. What's happening? Why are you yelling? And they sat on their beds, scared, because I was screaming at the top of my lungs. And they were like, are you okay? What's going on? I am not listening to them because I am talking to this thing or this invisible entity looking around the room as if I'm like a mad person gone crazy. And they were like, what happened? And I'm like just yelling, you coward, could you come to me right now? You think you can't do this to me. You think you can do it? Why now? Why not? Why would you do it when I'm not awake? What now? I don't know. What was I saying? But I gave a mouthful. I was just blabbering on for 10, 15 minutes. I was just screaming my lungs out. And I think by the time my my roommates kind of got the gist of what's going on. So they were frozen on their bed and looking around the room as if there's something there and they can't see it, but I am yelling at it. I finished and I was calmed down. And during my retrospection, when it was morning, as I was sitting and thinking about my experience, what happened to me? I was thinking, what was it? Was it a ghost? Was it a spirit? It definitely felt evil. Way, way evil. The category of a demon. That is what, when I did my research, you have heard stories of, you know, your grandmothers or your grandfathers or your great-grandfathers telling you that ghost stories and spirit stories. But they're always good spirits. There's always spirits having unfulfilled wishes, but never like they want to harm you, or maybe they can't move things because they're frustrated or something. But spirits can't do that. But demons, I think, yeah, they do, because they were never human. That was very scary, but I have not had any experiences after that. I'm like, you dare not come near me.
Wow. After you had that major experience where you confronted what you saw, how did everybody else's experiences change? I mean, what was the situation over, or did it continue?
After my experience, even my roommates kind of saw it happen. Not happen actually, but the part where I started yelling and screaming at nothing in the air, they kind of got the gist, because it was happening before. It happened to girls in the other section. So they knew that something of an entity or ghost stuff is going on. So we reported this to the officials, like to dorm officials. And being a religious community or being a religious country, you know, you have your religions. We have this rituals, purification rituals that they do. So they call the high priest and did their purification rituals for the dorm just to calm the kids and, if anything, to clear the atmosphere, cleanse it, as let's say. So after like a couple of months, I moved out because I finished my term. I have not heard since anything happening after, I think, the purification. But yeah, everybody kind of knew at that time that something's going on, and it was a talk of the campus.
Wow. Well, it's, you know, it's actually really nice to hear when you were able to report it and they responded positively. Like, they didn't say, oh, you crazy kids, it's all in your head. They actually took you seriously and came and took care of it.
That's— Yes, because I was not the only person reporting it. We went in as a group on the people who were affected. When you take that into consideration, when you have, like, say, the 12 girls from that side and 3 girls from my room, like, say, around 14, 15 kids having experiences not from one section, but a different, you know, different sides of the dorm, I think did take some action, you know, so that kind of calmed everyone down. It's mostly to calm them and to feel safe. I'm glad that they did take care of that.
There's definitely awesome. A pattern to the 3 a.m. thing.
But yes, I've heard when I did all, when I had this experience and I wanted to know more about the paranormal. I kind of found out that that's the time, even in Catholicism, it's said that right before dawn, right before 4 o'clock is when the most dark, that they say is around 2 to 4 is when things happen, like the evil side is active at that time. So yes, definitely there is something. As they say, Jesus was crucified at 3 p.m. So it's right 12 hours before that. So the 3 has to do something.
Right. It's like the whole thing. Opposite, the antithesis.
And the yin, like you have a yin and a yang, you have a black and a white. Opposite.
Well, and I've also heard that because of the Holy Trinity, you know, 3 represent the Trinity. So 3 a.m. would be the opposite.
Right, opposite. Yes.
Oh, it's just so creepy.
It is super creepy. Yeah, I've had like experiences when I used to go for adoration at 3 a.m. in my chapel. Me and my husband used to go there because nobody used to take that slot. We did that for 6 months. Before kids. Yes, before kids.
Okay.
Before kids. I wouldn't be doing this with kids. No way.
Kids, wake up!
No, not happening. Mother is not waking up. So you only do this kind of things when you are before kids, young, and you want to do like, yeah, let's go to the 3 a.m. slot. Nobody's taking it. That's the reason why nobody was taking it, because everyone had kids and they were sleeping. That's the time when you used to go to church. Gosh, I used to literally hear the ceilings being banged. I'm not kidding. I'm like, oh, the ceilings are just settling in or something. You know, you have the settling in noises when you move to a new house. You have the creaking sound, but it was not creaking. It's literally banging or something is running over it or something. It used to be very scary. And I used to step out only after like 4:15. I never stepped out even at 4. Used to sit for an hour. So like, used to take the 3 to 4 a.m. slot. I'm going to get out only after 4:15. Yeah, it used to be scary. But not personally, but this was very personal. This was very direct. Kind of makes you stronger in your faith. I think this experience, and feel empowered that you have been gifted with something that is way, way above everything that's called free will that God gave to humans. So yeah, that's my story. And I always make sure that I remember that, because that after that experience, you know, if there is darkness, if you have experienced it, there is light. That is because you have light.
Roshan, why do you feel like you were chosen to have this experience that was kind of the tipping point of these other 12 girls having these minor experiences?
If I think about that, I do not know. It's during that time when I was in college and post-graduation, when you're a kid, you have your parents to instill that in you. And when you are married, when you have your kids, when you're pregnant, you know that that is a miracle, because it's crazy how everything happens. But the middle point of your life between after getting out of your parents' shield or the protective power or whatever, you have that time when you want to be independent and form your own opinions and have your own say. And I think during that time is when I was kind of, yeah, there's God. Sure, I'm praying. Kind of taking it for granted kind of the way, I don't know, just saying your prayers. But after having that experience, I have no idea what kind of drew that entity to me. But I think it kind of followed it, because the girls kind of, I would say they bought it to me, kind of showed, hey, that's the girl. He's like, okay, let me try it on you. But it must be random. He must have thought, oh, let me go for, you know, a different room this time. Or it was, I would take it as an experience that kind of solidified as to where I wanted to have an experience. Like you always want to have like, maybe God coming down and saying hi or something like that. But I got the other experience. I'm like, dude, if you're here, definitely there is God. And when I screamed his name, it's your basic instinct to call upon the Almighty. That's why I said you go raise the focus, all your energy in expelling that, whatever that bad entity is. And I am happy that I felt protected and I felt that go away. And so I believe more now, and it kind of cemented. And since then, it's no turning back.
So that kind of cemented you in your faith. Maybe you were experiencing that more intensely than the other girls because you had more either to learn, or you already had power and strength of your faith inside of you, or?
Or maybe to know that I have the power to say no. To not even to just humans, but even to the things that I cannot see or to the supernatural. Nothing without my will or my Godfather's will cannot happen to me. He won't allow it. So that is one thing. I think that is what makes us special as a human being, that we choose where we stand And we know that we have that power to say no. When we hear people with women, even with human beings, with women, that's why we say you have to say no. You have to have the power to say no. You cannot just be thinking of others, what the world would say, what others would say. You have to stand up for yourself. I think that's why we say God is personal. Jesus came for you. So I think after that, I kind of got the experience that I have the power to say no, and it's going to stand. No means no.
That's really good that you saw it as empowering instead of just scary. That's
yeah, absolutely.
Yes, because that is what I said. When you're pinned to the wall, all you can do is fight back. That's instinctual. And why it happened to me, I don't know, but it happened. If I take the good, see the good out of it, even from a bad experience, I'm seeing the good. Instead of being fearful, I'm being empowered and standing up.
That's great. That's such a healthy way to,
you know. Yeah, otherwise I...
Your friend who was so scared and anxious and depressed during this whole process that you saw in the dorm, did she take comfort in hearing your experience and hearing you be empowered by it?
Yes, actually, I did get to her. I shared my experience with her. And she, too, took that in a positive way. She said, I'll definitely try it. She definitely took it to heart and she moved past it. We are good. We just now, we have need to talk. We laugh at it. Like, remember the ghost things happened to us. Man, that was
so creepy. So you're still in touch with her?
Oh, yeah.
That's wonderful. That's great.
We bonded over that whole incident that happened in the dorm.
Yeah, nothing creates bonding like being attacked by a demon, I guess.
Oh, no.
Yeah, if it's a shared experience. But yes. I think, I don't know if I've been alone, I would have, I don't know what would that have been, but I'm thankful that we had a collective experience.
Right.
It was a collective thing rather than me.
That's a really good point.
Labeled so, a crazy person.
You have the unique experience of living in two different countries for your life. How do you feel like your experience would have been different if you'd been surrounded by people in the US, Americans, instead of Indians?
I think as human beings, we would connect the same way if we have the same experiences.
Yeah.
I don't think they would be different, but if it's an individual experience, yeah, people might not see it as authentic as it would be if it's a collective experience.
Well, yeah, that experience of groups. I was just thinking that in the US, I wouldn't imagine that the officials would send in somebody to do a purification ritual.
Yeah.
This is not something that I would guess.
Yeah, my
personal experience with Michael.
My dorm, they probably would have sent in the cops.
Right.
Oh, no, yeah. In India, we are Indians. It's a big thing. We are very religious, whichever religion you are. So it's a culture thing. And so everybody knows about that. Just like here, we have exorcisms, right? You have priests. You have to do it too for them to calm the people down.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that's part of it too, you know, getting yourself in the right headspace.
Headspace, because you're students and scared away from home. Right. It definitely helps.
My husband keeps telling me to make sure I don't bring anything home because he says, we don't have anything to combat that. So just make sure you don't bring anything home.
That's why I do not like to go to funerals, because you go to a space that I am not sure who is hanging around, who is good, who is bad. And they say kind of people kind of tag you from there. So that's the reason, even in Indian culture, even in other religion, like Hindus or Christianity, we have a ritual that whenever you go to a funeral, you have to come back. The moment you step in your house, you have to go and take a bath, kind of purification process. And I especially will not go near any newborn or kids, just to make sure for a certain 2 to 3 days that I'm okay. If anybody can attack me, I don't want to pass on the attack to someone else. So I'm very careful about that.
Well, I'm going to rethink how I handle myself after funerals now. I'm starting to get goosebumps. So after this terrifying and yet empowering experience that you had in your dorm, and I know you said that you graduated after that, and you got married, you moved states.
That's correct.
Have you had, other than hearing knocking noises during adoration, have you experienced anything like this ever since that you would say was not necessarily personal, but paranormal or supernatural in a way?
No, not really. Because since that experience, I have made sure that in every day my prayers, I'm like, I do not want an experience like that. And as I said, it's my will. It's my free will. And I say, no way. I'm not going to have that experience. And I tell my kids, my older one is 10 years old. It's hard for us to explain how to explain the concept of God. How I tell them is, how I explain to them is, it's like a ball. He loves Pokemon, so he understands the ball thing. Pokemon helped me a lot. So I just kind of say, you know, the Pokemon ball. Your animal, your Pokemon, whoever comes out, and then he does his thing and he goes back inside his case. But that's his protective case. The ball is his protective case. So I said, whenever you pray, you have that invisible shield around you. When you pray, it kind of thickens, the ball kind of thickens.
That's excellent. And I'm sure there's going to be a mother listening to this who's going to use that after she hears you talk about it.
This is kind of an ongoing theme of this podcast, without intention, that how to talk to your kids about the paranormal, etc.
Yes.
Exactly. I tell my kids, I'm pretty open about things.
That's Becky, you felt that with your upbringing in the South of the United States, you were also kind of, there was an open dialogue about the paranormal in a non-scary way.
Well, for me, there was an open dialogue, but I think it was definitely scary. unfortunately, I think there was this sort of sadistic joy that adults got out of terrifying us. I don't know if you know this, Roshan, but I grew up in Upper East Tennessee, very isolated region of the Appalachian Mountains. It was an interesting place. Children were taken to cemeteries for fun and field trips and things. It was just a very bizarre approach to death and the afterlife. And it was just kind of a common theme. And I actually have a funny story. A friend of mine from where I grew up, she got a job as a preschool teacher in Chicago. So we connected once she moved up there. And she was telling me that she got in trouble at her job around Halloween. She told the kids a ghost story. There's like 3 and 4 year olds, right? But where we grew up, this was completely normal. And she's having these parents call her, the kids are having nightmares. And she says, Becky, I just don't know what I did wrong. And I'm like, oh, not everywhere is like where we're from.
Yes. Coming from India, it's very weird for me. When I came here the first few years, the whole Halloween concept, I'm like, why are we celebrating ghosts? Aren't you supposed to be scared of them or trying to keep them away from your life? I had no clue what Halloween was. And still, even now, when like people kind of wear scary masks and just dress up like a ghost, I just take it as another costume party. Like my kids want to go because everyone wants to go in America to Halloween. The main part is to get candies. That's why you go. But when I came to know the history, I'm like, why are we supposed to be doing that? I have no clue. And people going to, as you said, Becky, going to field trips to cemetery or stuff like that, or just seeing a movie in a cemetery. I'm like, why would you go to a place to see a movie in a cemetery or have a tour? But in India, I used to be scared because for grandparents who were buried, we used to go there on their death anniversary every year to say a prayer on their grave. Fun fact, our cemeteries, they are seriously creepy. You have tombstones, breaking out from the overgrown weeds in like mass graves. So by definition of cemetery in India, coming from there to here, cemetery is way different. Here in US, you have like flowers and it's like manicured lawns.
You said there were a lot of mass graves in these cemeteries?
Yeah, because mass graves, as in graves, we have a system where like family members buy a tomb, like a place to be buried, and like, a lot of people the same, from the family get laid at the same site, one above the other.
Oh.
In the same hole. Or okay. You dig the hole. Yeah.
Kind of stacked.
So very big population, very, very
stacked old. Up. Like all my family members sitting together. Hey, you're here now. Finally. Okay. I've been bored. The government had to come up with 5-year graves. Like you have temporary graves where because you have no land, you need to reuse the graves that are older than 10 years because you have only so much space. I don't know the details, but last time because my father-in-law passed away, I came to know that it's a 5-year grave. I don't know what will happen after that.
Oh, wow.
Is cremation popular there?
Yes, because in the religion, in Hindu, they cremate. That is a huge part of India, being cremated, especially near the holy places.
Oh, okay. So it's around, a public thing that happens and people get to observe it when it happens.
Yes, but it's a very different system where you take the body to that place that is right next to a river, like a holy river. There are cremation places that are along the riverbed.
Like a symbolic funeral pyre?
It is actually in a pyre. It's actually a pyre.
Okay.
Yeah. The big stack of woods and burn the body on the wood. And the ashes are submerged or they spread in the river. Sometimes the scary things also happen near Benares. That's the most holiest of places. Like you have Rome or like, you know, Vatican people come there to die because they feel that they'll have the moksha or the salvation. And there's a documentary on that. Morgan Freeman, he goes there.
Oh, I'm definitely going to check that out.
Oh, that it is. You'll be amazed and scared and horrified at the same time. I think now I heard Vatican has also allowed cremations.
It's actually a family tradition of mine. We've always cremated. I'm not sure why. I don't think it's a religion thing. I think my family has a very practical approach to death. We always have. So I think it's just kind of like, oh, well, that's cheaper and easier. So we'll just do it. There's a horrible story. I hope I don't get in trouble from my family for this. My great-grandfather fought in World War I. He got terrible mustard gas poisoning. Managed to hang on, but died, I think, maybe in the 40s or 50s. And my family cremated him. My great-grandmother apparently was not too upset that he was dead and left his ashes at the crematorium for 50 years. When she passed away in 92, we cremated her, and my aunt went to the original crematorium that had my great-grandfather's ashes. And lo and behold, they still had them. They were apparently ridden with termites, but they cleaned them out. And I'm sorry, this is a terrible story. Maybe I shouldn't tell it.
What?
But
so human remains can be ridden with termites?
This is what I was told. I wasn't there. I was 13. I was not allowed to come anywhere near the situation. But they were reunited in death. The ashes were put together in an urn in my grandmother's house.
Oh my goodness. That's different.
The especially disturbing part was they shoved the urn under the kitchen stairs.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's stored. It's somewhere in there.
They were always running into it.
But I don't know. How would I react to being mixed with somebody else's ashes?
I don't know that they had them in boxes next to each other. I don't know that they actually mingled the ashes themselves. They were at least respectful enough to.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
I would be like, why would you do that? Because it, you know, God says, like in Catholics, like you will be reborn, like you wake up. And I always thought that as he made from his breath, like, and we were humans. So he'll be like, hey, your ashes are mixed up. What am I supposed to do now? Sort through your ashes. At least if we're a grave, I would have all of your skeletons together. I know. Okay, food. Now what am I supposed to do with you? Mixed up things.
But if they're separate, that's good. Because that's the first thing that popped in my mind. That's so weird.
Right? No, that's brilliant.
Well, okay. This took a little bit of a turn as far as the conversation. But
my weird family. This is why I just need to keep my mouth shut sometimes.
I think this is why you're doing it, you know. Everyone is similar. I think we're all crazy in that way. As I said, all humans have some kind of experiences. So,
yes.
But I'll make sure I tell them if I get cremated, keep my ashes different. I don't want the confusion. Just in
case. Yes, absolutely.
Just in case.
I get reborn again and I have to come out. I'm like, I need all of my parts. And I cannot be half someone else and half someone else. No, I have to have.
Oh, man, not for all eternity. That sounds horrible.
Oh, yeah, that would be true.
Thank you so much for coming on today and talking to us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Becky, and thank you, Diana.
That was an awesome story, Roshan. Thank you.
Yes, that was great. And I am going to have shivers all night, I think. So
don't be scared.
Empowered. You're right. Be empowered. Absolutely. Thank you all. That's our show. Please be sure to check us out on Facebook at Homespun Haints, on Instagram at Homespun Haints. And if you have not done so already, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. We are available on almost every hosting provider that you could possibly want to find us on. So thanks again, everybody. And until next time,
have a spooky day.